go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the 30th day of January 2014. Happy birthday wishes going out to my buddy Greg, my colleague and dear friend Beau, and I believe this is also the birthday in 1919 of Fred Korematsu, who mounted a spirited resistance to the incarceration and concentration camp herding of Japanese Americans during the Second World War. Worth remembering. As I said, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room where the conversation is fun and always rigorous and interesting. Chat room filling up now. Jan's there. Hi, Jerry. Jerry's always with Jan. Sergi's there. Texas T is in there. Sparky's in there, of course. I'm there. Y'all come on by now. You hear? You can also find the Listen Live button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And also, you can find the PayPal button. And that's how we keep this entire thing going. Because there's no big dollars coming this way from labor unions or green think tanks or liberal policy. No, none of that. It's just us. This goes on as long as you determine that it will go on. What does that mean? Well, in this case, it means that we're in a hole. It means we need to raise $150 this evening plus $25 we didn't raise last night, so that's $155, plus $75 from the night before, that's $160. That's $230, and $305 tonight. Or, well, okay, let's just finish. Let's just say what we got to do to finish the week. $455 between tonight and tomorrow night to finish January to the good. Or, well, not to the good, just on schedule. So, there we go. Any portion at all is mightily appreciated. Now, this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, you know, Thorn in the Side Thursday is dedicated to those moments in right-wingery in which we find ourselves absolutely driven, almost running out into the cold, tearing at our own clothing, frustrated. And we got plenty of them. Now, update. There's an update, of course, from here in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone. The West Virginia Department of Health and Department of Environmental Protection is now prepared to say that they are not entirely certain. I may have mentioned this last night, but they are not entirely certain that the Freedom Industries link of poison into the Elk River, which is the common drinking water supply for 9 counties in West Virginia, actually started on January the 9th. They're not sure. It may have been the 8th. Or if you talk to people who live around Freedom Industries, it may have been back before Christmas. Really? Or maybe Christmas thereabouts. What a present. So, and by the way, Dr. Rahul Gupta, who is doing what appears to be a pretty doggone good job of being a public servant in this whole fray, has plainly said that medical monitoring needs to be taking place going forward. He also noted that medical monitoring needed to be taking place when this whole thing started. That means that people are, some people are at least beginning to wise up. And you know, I'm not gonna crawl up on my high horse and start hollering about the fact that I've been saying that for weeks. Because, well, what good would it do? But it's a fact. I did. They're also now finally talking about the fact that maybe, just maybe, people's water heaters and plumbing supply lines aren't necessarily safe. Which, too, I've been talking about for a while. Because it's true. We don't know what these chemicals do or degrade to or interact with. Apparently it degrades into formaldehyde. So maybe this isn't a thorn in the side, but maybe it's a thorn in the kidneys or a thorn in the liver or a thorn in the all our guts. You know what I mean? Although, I mentioned last night Dr. Simonton, who found himself a sample of water from a little restaurant in Charleston and took it back to the lab and subjected it to a little bit of sciencey testing and discovered, lo and behold, that there was formaldehyde in the water. Well, it was a moment of really, really disgusting governmental sleaziness. Dr. Simonton made note of what he had found. And the head of the Bureau of Public Health of the state of West Virginia, and I don't really know who this person is, except to note that this person said, "Well, there's formaldehyde everywhere. It's all over the place. Shucks, we have formaldehyde in our bodies." Oh, really? From Ken Ward and David Gutman's Charleston Gazette story yesterday. Early Wednesday evening, the State Department of Health and Human Resources issued a statement that called Simonton's comments regarding formaldehyde totally unfounded. Because what Dr. Simonton had said was, it's frightening. It really is frightening. What we know scares us, and we know there's a lot more we don't know. Yes, yes. Enter the Department of Health and Human Resources saying that Dr. Simonton's comments regarding formaldehyde were totally unfounded and said that when he spoke, he does not speak to the health and safety of West Virginians. We do that. It's our job. We're friends of coal. Okay, they didn't say the friends of coal part. It's just sort of implicit in all of this. And then enter Dr. Letitia Tierney. Now, she is the commissioner of the Bureau for Public Health. And she said, according to the article, that the chemists the state had consulted with, at which point, really, which coal company did they work for? They all said the formaldehyde could not have come from the methylhexane cyclomethan. No.
Our experts are all in agreement that it's unlikely that his findings are any way related to the chemical spill. It's already in our environment. And this has nothing to do with coal companies. I don't think there's a coal company within 100, but this is not about coal.
Okay, I added the she said it's not about coal part, but kind of goes with the whole script, doesn't it? It's already in our environment. And then they went on in the time-honored fashion of attacking the messenger. The story noting Tierney and Elizabeth Sharman, director of the West Virginia Poison Center, questioned Simonton's methodology, saying that he hasn't released multiple samples, the lab he used, or how his sample was collected, or other details, or whether he thinks coal is good for West Virginia. Wait, I added that part, too. Well, they also said Simonton had not made attempts to contact them. The knife! They didn't contact us. I mean, we're the people you contact. We'll tell you if it's safe to drink the water. It's safe to drink the water and bathe your babies in it. And if you get cancer 10 years from now, well, we'll be beyond your reach by then. Dr. Tierney continued,
formaldehyde is naturally produced in very small amounts in our bodies as part of our normal everyday metabolism and causes no harm. It can also be found in the air that we breathe at home and at work, in the food we eat, and in some products that we put on our skin.
Okay, so we're supposed to be okay with it being in the tap water, too? And then this. This was the one it took. No Alabama jokes, please. This is serious. It took a guy named Andrew Welton, who is an environmental engineer from the University of South Alabama in Mobile. It took him driving all the way from Mobile to Charleston, which is no small poke, I might tell you. He brought a team of researchers with him to take water samples and to try to figure out what the flushing process ought to be. And what he pointed out is that the flushing process that was hustled by Governor Earl Ray Tomlin and West Virginia American Water was inadequate to the task, if any flushing can be said to be adequate. Welton emphasized that residents should open their windows during the flushing process and use ceiling or floor fans to push chemical fumes outside. He also suggests shutting off hot water tanks before flushing because chemicals in the water will evaporate faster into your home or workplace from hot water than from cold. Interviewed, he also said that it's crucial that officials begin testing and sampling inside people's homes to determine the level of contamination of plumbing systems and what to do about it. Finally! 20 days! Oh, well, I guess Cassandra got pissed off from time to time, too, didn't she? But really, it's been 20 days. What about the water tanks? What about the water heaters? What about the supply lines?
Well, just flush your tanks like Governor Earl Ray says, and then it's up to you.
Jesus. And then this, the buried lead. And I mean buried deep, too. I can't believe they aren't doing this, Welton said. These issues aren't being addressed. The long-term consequences of this spill are not being addressed. It took an environmental scientist from the University of South Alabama to come to West Virginia and say, you're not talking about what needs to be talked about. You're not asking the questions that need to be asked. You're not doing the things that need to be done. God Almighty. And that is the question. What does this mean 5 years out, 10 years out, 15 years out? What does this mean 20 years out? Meanwhile, what really matters has begun to be explored. The Charleston Convention and Visitors Bureau now says that at least $1 million was lost in tourism dollars as a result of this disaster. Oh, wait, there was money lost? Oh, it matters now. God Almighty. Let's take care of the money. Ixnay on the Otterway, where oozing lay Urism Te Ollers Day. Email rolling in from Sergi. Subject line, formaldehyde and such. So, going by the moron's logic, and believe me, I use that word logic lightly, since there's trace amounts of arsenic in rice, it's fine and dandy to just bathe in the stuff like it's water, right? Signed, Sergi. Come on in, boys. The water's fine. Kyle. That seems to be, yes, the case. And I've been paying close attention to social media. And I'm seeing people actually beginning to... God knows the government's not going to ask the questions. But I am seeing people asking questions of their own with some real validity. Like, why is Earl Ray Tomblin still governor of the state of West Virginia? Why has he not resigned? Why has a bill of impeachment not been drawn up? My friend Dustin posted on Facebook a little bit ago. So Dad has to go to the hospital in the morning. He may have a bad infection. You bet your asses we're going to find out from the doctors if it had anything to do with the fact that we didn't have proper access to clean water to be able to keep him clean enough. He'll have to be admitted for a day, maybe two, taking antibiotics. Jesus. But, yes, impeachment is a possibility. We do not have referendum and recall in West Virginia, but impeachment's a possibility. Now, you would have to find a member of the West Virginia House of Delegates who has not already sold out to Cole and or Earl Ray Tomblin. Because remember, Tomblin was for quite some time the speaker of the... he was president of the Senate. And he's got a lot of buddies and cronies there. Mm-hmm. You know the drill. But, by the way, from the Department of Just Saying, let me direct your attention to the Constitution of the state of West Virginia. More particularly, Article 4, Section 9 of the Constitution of the State of West Virginia. It reads, interestingly, as follows. Any officer of the state of, and much to my chagrin, Earl Ray Tomblin is one, any officer of the state may be impeached for maladministration, corruption, incompetency, gross immorality, neglect of duty, or any high crime or misdemeanor. The Senate shall have the sole power to try impeachments, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members elected thereto. When sitting as a court of impeachment, the president of the Supreme Court of Appeals, or if from any cause it be improper for him to act, then any other judge of that court to be designated by it, shall preside, and the senators shall be on oath or affirmation to do justice according to law and evidence. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold any office of honor, trust, or profit under the state, but the party convicted shall be liable to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. The Senate may sit during the recess of the legislature for the trial of impeachments. Let's go back and look at those grounds. First of all, let's stay out, because there's some experience on this, let's stay out of the high crimes and misdemeanors weeds. Let's just limit our inquiry to Earl Ray Tomlin and maladministration. Or Earl Ray Tomlin and corruption. Or Earl Ray Tomlin and incompetency. Or Earl Ray Tomlin and gross immorality. Or Earl Ray Tomlin and neglect of duty. Now, you and I here in the second decade of the 21st century, we hear incompetency, and I think we tend to think in terms of somebody being a really, really bigger than usual F-up. And Earl Ray is one of those. But I'm guessing, and this is strictly guessing, I'm guessing that incompetency as used in this Article 4, Section 9 of the West Virginia Constitution refers to him having become mentally incapable of doing his job. You know, like say you were the governor of West Virginia back between 1996 and or January 1997 and January 2001, and you were old enough to be a Fox viewer, and you were such a damn drunk they had to stand you up like the corpse at an Irish wake at your own Christmas party. That kind of, you know. Yeah, but we didn't impeach him. Probably should have, but didn't. So let's strike incompetency out, too. But how's about neglect of duty? Now that Earl Ray's own Department of Environmental Protection is saying they just ain't really too particular sure exactly when the leaking started, but they know that they were... But it got bad enough that people were ringing the phone off the hook starting about 8 o'clock on Thursday, the 9th day of January 2014. And it took Earl Ray Tomlin's West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection about 3 hours and 15 minutes to get... And granted, most of you have never been to Charleston. It's not New York or Chicago or... given the traffic situation, even Atlanta. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection sits within a mile of an interstate that will take you in about 4 minutes, 5 minutes time tops to the side of town where the leak happened. Under typical morning rush hour conditions, it shouldn't take more than 15 minutes to get from the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection over to Freedom Industries. Charitably, 30, and you're really taking the back roads and trying to make sure that, right, 30 minutes. Took 3 hours and 15 minutes. So it's 11:15. It's 11:15 when the WVDEP guys finally, after having been first stonewalled by the president of Freedom Industries, or at least he was supposed to be the president, we're not really sure if he was the president. He was listed as the president on the website, but he wasn't really, at least not by the time Gary Southern came out with his bottle of water for his let them drink water news conference. So they finally quit getting, oh, it just smells like that around here. I mean, you know, he's been doing business.
job creators. Well, we aren't job creators. He was doing business and creating jobs, and it just smells like that. And that's the point at which the guy comes up and whispers in Denny's ear and says, cheese and crackers, Peter. And, oh, wait, I think we got a problem. And so by then, with the clock still, I'm Morley Safer. I'm Mike Wallace. They finally go and they see the 4-foot-wide stream of poison going into the Elk River, accompanied by what the DEP inspector later described as an artesian well geysering up as the source of the leak. Tick, 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 tick. 11:30? Yeah. The warning finally came out around, what, 5, 6? So if we want to talk about Earl Ray Tomblin, who is the governor of this state, who is in charge of the whole shebang, we're talking about, because had this been methyl isocyanate like it was in 2008, and had that stuff released a toxic cloud, the time it took Earl Ray Tomblin to respond to this crisis would have had most of Charleston and the Kanawha Valley dead. And you're probably sick of hearing this, but again, that morning, mothers were bathing children in the poison water. That morning, coffee was being fixed for elders in nursing homes with that water. That morning, pots and pans were being scrubbed in schools with that water. All while Earl Ray Tomblin dithered. Earl Ray Tomblin's political contributors were poisoning the water of 300,000 people while Earl Ray didn't quite know what to do. God Almighty! What do you do? You pick up the phone and you say, shut it down. Get me them boys over at West Virginia American Water. I don't give a damn if we're going to be inconvenienced a little bit. It's better than poison the whole damn valley. Shut her down! What do you mean? Who am I to say? By God, I'm the governor of the state of West Virginia, and I said shut her down, or I'll send a couple of tanks over there to shut it down for you. Shut her down! But Earl Ray couldn't do that because Earl Ray is not made of that kind of stuff. And Earl Ray apparently was much more interested in trying to find out how best to cover his pals in the coal industry's asses, because his first damn pronouncement on this was, this has nothing to do with the coal industry. So can we say that we'll probably have 2 or 3 counts of neglect of duty? Maybe maladministration. And, you know, now that we mentioned the elders having their coffee made with poison water, now that we mentioned the mamas who were bathing their babies in that water, now that we mention school children having their school lunches made with that water, and especially since we mentioned that he went to such pains to declare, this ain't about coal. You reckon can we throw in a count of gross immorality? Because see, if we can't make inquiries into questions of morality on issues relating to the well-being of nigh 500,000 human beings,
If our only definition of morality or immorality was whether or not Earl Ray was seen slipping a $10 bill into that cute little thing's garter down there to the pink pony naked lady bar, I think we have a sincerely twisted idea of what morality is. I'm not concerned with how often or what church Earl Ray Tomblin goes to, although I suspect he falls on his knees to know God. I'm far more concerned with the morality of how a man put in a position of public trust manages that public trust, lives up to that public trust. For me, at least, and again, I want to create no misconceptions. I am not in the affected area. I'm not in the affected counties. One county over. But the next one's coming. In the sacrifice zone of Central Appalachia, the next one is always just around the corner. I mean, we've got historical precedent to look for in this. Arch Moore was governor of this state in the late 60s and early 70s. The man's so crooked that when he dies, they'll have to screw him into the dirt. He was governor of this state in February of 1972 when the Buffalo Creek disaster transpired, when a wall of water consisting of some couple of hundred million gallons of toxic waste roared down a holler in Logan County, killed 125 people and displaced God knows how many others, and from which the area to this day has never fully recovered. Arch Moore's first thought in that instance was to try to keep journalists from getting access to the scene of the disaster. He called out the National Guard to try to keep people from seeing what his buddies in the coal industry had accomplished that bloody morning. He was not impeached. We would, in fact, have to wait 15 long years or thereabouts for the feds to finally catch him taking money, you know. Those high crimes and misdemeanors? Yeah. And even then he didn't get impeached. Arch A. Moore, Jr., the 28th and 30th governor of the state of West Virginia. They tried to get him back in 1975, but he was acquitted of trying to shake down a holding company to the tune of $25,000 for a charter for a new bank. Being governor, he was in charge of the state government when it was Pittston Coal, who caused the Buffalo Creek disaster. And the state sued Pittston Coal for $100 million. In relation to the damages they had caused Pittston. Of that $100 million, about $50 million was supposed to go for cleanup and restoration. Arch Moore settled with Pittston on behalf of the state of West Virginia for $1 million, which Pittston then, of course, wrote off on their taxes. Yeah, it took a while to catch up with Arch. But eventually he did plead guilty to 5 felony counts. Of accepting illegal payments during the 1984 and 1988 election campaigns. He shook down a coal company for about $500,000. And then tried to cover it up. We didn't impeach him. That probably goes to show that we've got a bit of an uphill climb. But I am beginning to sense there is outrage out there. And if any group of people ever had a right to be outraged at the way they have been treated for generation upon generation, it's the people of the state of West Virginia. And yeah, as Jim notes, his daughter, Shelley, is now running for Senate and laughed about the poison water. It's funny now. Of course, we're into this a little more deeply than anybody else. But we had a pipe burst in the basement of our home, and we had to call the help in to fix it. Yeah. And bless his heart, kudos. Got a note from Rob in Minnesota. Kudos to William Rivers Pitt over at Truthout, who, as Rob noted, even though President not sure, you know, the commandant in chef, Jesus. Even though he couldn't be bothered to mention the suffering of nearly 500,000 people in West Virginia during the State of the Union, as Rob noted, William Rivers Pitt did. Writing of the State of the Union, William Rivers Pitt at Truthout, that's truth-out.org, says, and as we're on the subject of the environment, there's this state on the eastern seaboard called West Virginia. Well, we're not really on the eastern seaboard. We're kind of landlocked except for the rivers that they keep pouring the poison into, but I'm not going to quibble with Will. I get it. Maybe the seaboard doesn't, you don't have to have coastline, maybe. I don't know. I'll leave that to the geographers. And as we're on the subject of the environment, there's this state on the eastern seaboard called West Virginia that Mr. Obama is president of, along with the other 49. A company called Freedom Industries dumped poison into the water supply, two separate and distinct poisons, as it turns out, and left 300,000 people, their businesses, their schools, their hospitals, their retirement homes, without water to drink or bathe in or cook with for days and days and days. According to industry specialists, the water is safe to drink now, but here's the funny part. The poisons that got dumped into the water supply have a funny way of breaking down into formaldehyde after a time, or perhaps other substances, chemistry, better living, which they now have. And so all those West Virginians who had to avoid drinking the water are now drinking and cooking with and showering in, read, ingesting and breathing in a known carcinogen, and no one seems to be dealing with it. The president made no mention of that state, those citizens, or the industry that poisoned the water in the first place. If there is, right now, a better example of why we need stricter environmental regulations to protect the American people from these kinds of incidents, I'm not aware of it. And the president gave it a miss. But then again, and, you know, come on down, Will. Show you around. This country has been giving West Virginia a miss since roughly June the 20th, 1863. We came into being as a state primarily as a means of sticking a finger in the eye of the folks of the Commonwealth, the Old Dominion, over in Richmond. Yeah. But maybe, just maybe, if people can characterize this disaster as the human rights crisis that it is, and make sure that nobody gets called an environmentalist, maybe we can get a few thousand people to march on the Capitol and demand some damned answers. Or demand the resignation of Earl Ray Tomlin. Or maybe we'll just sit back and take it again. Hard to say. I don't know. January's off to a hell of a start, isn't it? At least around here. Hey, damn, we got all the way up past freezing today here. It might get nigh 50 tomorrow and the next day. At least according to the little weather hoosis that I consult. Hoo-wee! Saturday, high temperature 55, low of 43, and no low lower than 21 all the way through Tuesday. Goodness gracious. Impressive. So you'll pardon me, I hope, if I've just spent the last 43 minutes on this particular really big toxic thorn that is in our side here. We can talk about other stuff. Absolutely. It's always that way here. You know the number, 304-658-3333. Over on the Skype, you can always reach out by sending a contact request, or just if we're already friends or contacted or whatever we are on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Email works equally well, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. You can contact me via Facebook, Bob Kincaid, again, and @BobKincaid on Twitter. All those methods and means are just fine. By the way, had an anonymous contribution come in. And we've gone from 455 needed for to finish out the week and the month to 355 with a challenge. That some combination of people step up and match that 100 so that we've got a fighting chance to finish out the month okay. Note in from Irish Dave on my geographic uncertainty. If you all aren't on the seaboard, how did them Titanic plates get there? Came by rail, just like oysters at Christmas, Dave. No, there are other thorns. Thorns in Utah, thorns in Colorado. And who'd have thunk it? One of those periodic pastiches of right-wing religion industry persecution has fallen apart at the seams. I think we'll have time for that. And then there's Rand Paul and that thing on his head. We could probably spend an hour on him. But I would far rather spend the time on stuff you find it worthwhile to spend time on. And that means you've got to set some of the agenda. And, well, as you wish. So we'll take a little break, and you can light up the phones if you want to. Lines are open. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Minutes before the hour. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and you know, a little comment from over on the Skype side of things. A note from our buddy the Angry Indian. Call it, Bob. The great leader of Pax Americana did not mention racial profiling, institutional racism, of environmental genocide once in his State of the Euro Settler speech. The days of the Scots-Irish seeing themselves as white are over. Get with the program. Think Huey Long in the social justice sense. Stand with the people who stand against Big Coal, who probably stood with Dr. Martin Luther King during the Poor People's March on Washington. Remember that one? The march that united poor blacks with poor whites and poor Indians in front of the National Monument? I do, and the right wing has not forgiven the Reverend Jesse Jackson ever since. Well said, Angry. Well said. Because I did go back, because he kindly linked it in the Truth Out piece. I did go back and read the whole transcript, and yeah, there were some real shudder-inducing moments in that thing. I think the unit would have busted if you had tried to gauge the State of the Union with an oscilloscope, because he went from corporatist to whatever he wants the people who, well, you know, 1 minute it's pristine federal lands, and the next thing it's drill, baby, drill. I prefer my liquor straight. If you're going to go all drill, baby, drill, don't be talking no pristine federal lands. Mm-mm. No. No, I highly recommend William Rivers Pitt's piece. There's a lot of food for thought there. I mentioned Rand Paul. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear. You know, there's... as is made obvious on this program most any evening, there is a lot wrong in America. I should probably be a lot better at talking about what is right and happy and sunshiny and good with butterflies and daisies. Oh, wait, the butterflies are going away. Oh, really? Ran across that in the New York Times. It is estimated that there are no more than, and even though it sounds like a big number, it's a small number, it is estimated now that there are perhaps no more than 35 million migrating monarch butterflies. Among other things, their habitat, where they overwinter in the Sierra Nevada of Mexico, has been diminished to roughly about the size of 1 1/4 football fields. From the New York Times story by Michael Wines, the Mexican government and the World Wildlife Fund said at a news conference on Wednesday that the span of forest inhabited by the overwintering monarchs shrank last month to a bare 1.65 acres, the equivalent of about 1 1/4 football fields. Not only was that a record low, but it was just 56% of last year's total, which was itself a record low. At their peak in 1996, the monarchs occupied nearly 45 acres of forest. Can you imagine walking through that forest in the time before white folks got here? It'd be hard to do that and not figure out that and not assume that there was some sort of deity at work. In fact, I think the pictograph for a song or a poem at the time was a speaker with a butterfly by his mouth or hers. It indicated beauty, poetry, art, singing. Karen Oberhauser is a conservation biologist at the University of Minnesota. Her specialty is monarch butterflies. She said, this is the third straight year of steep declines, which I think is really scary. This phenomenon, both the phenomenon of their migration and the phenomenon of so many individuals doing it, that's at risk.
Well, hell! We ain't figured out a way to make money off of them yet. And if you can't make money off of something on this planet, what the hell good is it, right? Am I right? You betcha.
I mean, who knows? Maybe underneath the forest there where the butterflies are, maybe there's some frack gas.
Or some oil. Or some tar sands. And that's a hell of a lot more important than a damn butterfly.
You ever watch a butterfly fly? Watching a butterfly fly is really to sort of redefine the idea of flight. Because we like to think of flight in terms of how if we could sprout some wings and do it ourselves, that we think we'd do it. Because we'd go high in the sky and we'd just zoom, you know, Superman-like, right? Now, imagine that butterfly. And imagine the fact that somehow, hardwired inside them, is the knowledge that at some point in time in the Canadian summer, they need to go get out and take off and fly to the Sierra Nevada of Mexico. Which I might add, much like Mobile to Charleston, West Virginia, is a long damn way. But there is not a single monarch butterfly that can be said to take the direct route, at least not as we comprehend the idea of direct. But you know what? It's direct enough for the monarchs. At least it was. Michael Wines continues, by some estimates, a billion or more monarchs once made the 2,500-mile-plus trip, breeding and dying along the route north so that their descendants were actually the ones that completed the migration. The number of surviving butterflies has varied from year to year, sometimes wildly, but the decrease in the size of the migration in the last decade has been steep and generally steady. The latest drop is best explained by a 2-year stretch of bad weather, said Chip Taylor, a biologist at the University of Kansas, who studied the butterflies for decades. While good weather may help the monarchs rebuild their numbers, their long-term problem, the steady shrinking of habitat along the migratory route, poses a far greater danger. Well, there I go again, being an environmentalist, worrying about the butterflies. But you know what? Butterflies are worth worrying about. Because all the stuff that we decide isn't worth worrying about is the stuff that when it's gone, we'll realize we're next! How about that? Turns out the migratory patterns have been screwed up by wild swings and changes in weather. As they flew north from Mexico in early 2012, months of near-record heat sapped their endurance and skewed their migratory patterns in ways that limited their ability to reproduce. Then last spring, the opposite happened. Unusual springtime cold in Texas delayed the butterflies' northward migration, causing them to arrive late in areas where they would normally have bred weeks earlier. They have to arrive in the middle of a 40-day period to do really well. If they arrive too early, the population crashes, and if they arrive too late, the population crashes. And it keeps coming back to habitat. You know, a fit place to live. Consumable water. Monarchs lay their eggs only on milkweed, and patches of the plant have rapidly disappeared from the Great Plains over the last decade. Gee, I wonder why, McMansion communities. Gee, I wonder why. Oh, wait, look. There it is. As corn prices have risen, spurred in part by a government mandate to add ethanol to gasoline, farmers have planted tens of millions of acres of idle land along the monarch's path that once provided both milkweed and nectar. Gee, what kind of corn did they plant? Ha! How about that? They planted... You ready? Yeah, Roundup Ready corn! And you spray the Roundup on the Roundup Ready corn, and the Roundup doesn't kill the corn, but it kills everything else that isn't the corn, which are then deemed, because those other things, like milkweed, are deemed to be, huh, how about that, weeds? Because profit! And oddly enough, this started out to be a discussion of Senator Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Well, it still is. Because the whole point was that there are a lot of things on this planet to be concerned about. And what is Rand Paul concerned about? Well, he wants to make sure you can take your freedom protecting shooting iron to the post office with you. You know, post offices are government buildings, and there's a freedom infringing ban on taking your firearm to the post office. Wolverines! Enter the National Association for Gun Rights. And they're encouraging people to stand with Senator Paul by taking action right away and prepare to fight tooth and nail. Us, the normal people, are preparing to fight tooth and nail against Senator Paul's proposal. And his proposal is, of course, to lift the ban on taking your firearm to the post office. Focus much, Rand? Now, granted, he did say two nights ago that he doesn't think government is stupid, although there is an argument to be made along those lines. He really did. The gun goobs continue. Gun-free zones are really criminal safe zones that only serve to provide would-be criminals with a place to find unarmed victims. No law-abiding citizen should be disarmed and placed at the mercy of would-be criminals. Well, why does a person who wants to buy a goddamn book of stamps have to be placed at the mercy of some lawful gun owner who, in the space of travel that it takes to pull the trigger back and make the hammer hit the firing pin, hit the and the gun and the rifling and the bullet and the dead, why? Because their answer to this is that there is no place in the United States of America where a human being should be able to go and feel like they are safe from having some lawful gun owner turn into an awful gun owner in the space of a fraction of a second. Hungry people? Rand Paul's not interested. Well, yeah, he is interested. That in a minute. But no, there's no place. There's no place. Let's go over to the Indiana Gazette at indianagazette.com. From a little hamlet called Indiana, Pennsylvania. Alma mater, I believe, of one Jimmy Stewart. Indiana University of Pennsylvania. There is an investigation now underway. I'll just read from the text. Sam Cusick is the reporter. State police in Indiana, Pennsylvania are asking for help in identifying the man who shot an IUP student early this morning during a confrontation at an off-campus apartment building. According to police, the incident occurred shortly after 2 a.m. at 565 Maple Street in White Township. Trooper John Matchick said the shooting may have been the climax to a road rage incident that began shortly before at 7th and Philadelphia Streets in Indiana Borough. Here's how it went down as freedom got protected in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Police said the victim and some friends were stopped in a vehicle at the intersection, and one got out to close a hood or a hatch that had popped open. Meanwhile, the shooter, who is described as a white man in his early 20s, pulled behind and may have grown annoyed at the delay. Horns may have been honked, police said, and words may have been exchanged. Then, as a result, the lawful gun owner began following the victim's car to the apartment building. Trooper Magic said the victim and the shooter both got out of their vehicles, and a confrontation ensued. In the course of the confrontation, the shooter struck the victim's head, causing him to stumble backward and fall down. The shooter continued assaulting the victim, and then pulled out a handgun and shot the victim in the leg. The victim, a 20-year-old who wasn't being identified by either police or the university this morning, was flown to Conemaugh Memorial Hospital Center Medical Center in Johnstown, PA, where he was reportedly in stable condition this morning. Trooper Magic said the shooter fled in his vehicle, which may have been a silver Lincoln MKZ. Police said the sedan may have aluminum wheels and a sunroof and appeared to be clean. Police said the shooter, which is kind of interesting when you consider how much snow and ice and everything. Around here, there ain't no clean vehicles. Police said the shooter had a passenger in his car, a white man in his 20s, wearing a blue sweatshirt. Police said that that witness got out of the car, saw the assault take place, and then ran off. Authorities were trying to identify that man this morning. Magic stressed that he is considered only a witness at this point. Police said they believe the incident is isolated. I disagree. Because Purdue, because Virginia Tech, because I think in Florida earlier today, because. Still, IUP officials issued a crime alert to students this morning, advising them to take certain precautions, such as traveling in groups and avoiding dimly lighted areas. IUP campus police are working with state police to identify the shooter, who remained at large this morning. Matchick said the incident was recorded on surveillance cameras and troopers are reviewing the footage. Police have asked anyone with any information to call the barracks at 7... Well, never mind. I got some information. I'm not going to call or anything, but I've got some information. Guns are easier to get in this country than fishing licenses. How's that for some information? We've had a notorious public shooting almost every day of this month of this young year. There's some information. The incident is not isolated. This is a country that is involved in an undeclared war with itself. Okay, Jimmy Stewart graduated from Princeton in 1932. Jim, thank you. Then he was from Indiana, Pennsylvania. Now I have to go and check. Yep, born May 20th, 1908, Indiana, Pennsylvania, son of Elizabeth Ruth and Alexander Maitland Stewart, who owned a hardware store. Okay. But understand that Rand Paul wants this guy, who is in such poor control of his own temper and yet is a lawful gun owner, and he wants him to be able to take his gun to the post office, because freedom. Freedom demands it. The Second Amendment says that we all need it. Oh, Jesus. I like the use of all these "mays" in the article, too. May have been the climax to a road rage incident. May have had aluminum wheels. They may have had words. Oy. Okay, so we've got a lot of possibilities here. Which one of those possibilities excuses the conduct of the shooter in deciding to A, hit the guy in the head, and then B, shoot him in the leg? Because it almost sounds like, I mean, no, I'm not going to say that. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like almost like there's some sort of an excuse being set up here for the guy going from lawful gun owner to awful gun owner in the span of a split second. And the paragraph that says, in the course of the confrontation, the shooter struck the victim's head, causing him to stumble backward and fall down. No maze in there. The shooter continued assaulting the victim, and that, no, actually, he continued to batter the victim. Generally speaking, to assault someone is to put them in fear of receiving an immediate bodily harm or unconsented to touching. The crime becomes battery when the touching takes place, whether it be a blow to the head or a tap on the shoulder. So an assault, it's battery. And frankly, it's not too strong a language to say he continued to batter his victim. Unless there's something wildly different about the code of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which there may be. Who knows? Maybe our old buddy Spike could help with that. It may have been a silver Lincoln MKZ, and it may have had aluminum wheels. It may have had a sunroof. It did appear to be clean. And there's no may involved. It was just another day. Just another day in a country where gun rights are more important than human rights. But Rand Paul and the thing on his head are more concerned with whether that dude can take his gun to the post office. Did I mail 2 letters? Or did I mail 3? What you gotta ask yourself, Postmaster, is, do I feel lucky? Yow. But no, it would be unfair to say that that's all that Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, that's all he's concerned about, because he's got a lot of concerns about freedom in America, where government, where he's engaged in a debate as to whether government is stupid. Much more. In particular, he's worried about all them children that the poors are having, which is going to be interesting, watching him twist himself into a pretzel, trying to explain why it is that he's worried about the poors having babies, but yet at the same time he wants to make sure he can control how women use their women parts. This is this is from a speech that he made to actual people who came out to have lunch and listened to him ruin it. Now, that's not fair. The lunch was held by the Chamber of Commerce in Lexington, Kentucky. And apparently Rand has a little eugenics problem and that thing on his head. Because we all know he doesn't much care for the welfare anyhow. You can read the story over at Kentucky.com. Sam Youngman writes, during a Lexington luncheon Thursday, U.S. Senator Rand Paul, and I will add, and that thing on his head, discussed the possibility of cutting government benefits for unwed mothers who've had multiple children. See, if I even typed those words, I'd have to just stop, push the little slidey thing in with the keyboard on it, and go outside and bark at the moon for a little bit. The man who thinks government is arguably stupid wants government to try to make sure that the poors don't have any so much poor's babies, as long as they are bastards. He doesn't want them to be born. And Rand, well, you know, Rand and that thing on his head, he has a deep and abiding understanding of the Constitution and the founding and how this country came to be, only he doesn't seem to understand that bastardy was largely eliminated in this country. During a question and answer period following his remarks at a Commerce Lexington luncheon, Paul responded to a question. You can just imagine who asks the question, right? Tri-cornered hat, little tea bags hanging off of it. About workforce development by including a warning about unwed young mothers doomed to poverty. Wait a minute. Doomed to poverty. Doomed. Although he said the job of preventing unplanned or unwanted pregnancies should be left to communities and families.
What, Edith?
He wants a city council meeting to decide whether or not Joni Smith can have a baby.
What a freak!
Thank God he's only an ophthalmologist and not a libertarian gynecologist. Although he said the job of preventing unplanned, and I'm not sure I'm not reading Linear A at this point, although he said the job of preventing unplanned or unwanted pregnancies should be left to communities and families, Paul left open the possibility of a role for government.
Maybe we have to say enough's enough. You shouldn't be having kids after a certain amount.
Yeah, those folks over at Right to Life are going to be loving that.
Nah, they're not going to give a damn. Who am I kidding? They live in a world that is constant, unending cognitive dissonance. They can keep that in. Rand Paul is pro-life. They can keep that in their head right alongside. Rand Paul thinks that maybe the government should tell people how many babies to have. And whether they're wealthy enough and libertarian enough to be having them. Me without my Thorazine. That's a real quote. It's got quotation marks around it and everything. Maybe we have to say, enough's enough, you shouldn't be having kids after a certain amount. And then the fun, an aide to Paul declined to comment Thursday night when asked to clarify the senator's statements about unwed mothers. What's to clarify? Does that really need clarification? Rand Paul, and come on, please, let's not pretend that Rand Paul is talking about poor, unwed white mamas. Paul told the audience that being married with kids versus unmarried with kids is the difference between living in poverty and not. Son of a bitch, that's going to come as a real shocker to a whole lot of married people in West by God, Virginia, and probably Eastern by God, Kentucky. We should sell that message.
There always has to be some business involved, doesn't there?
We should sell that message, not in a mean way to tell people who already have made a bad decision, but if you've had one child and you're not married, you shouldn't have another one. And this is the guy who's against big government. Whoop! I didn't realize it was going to be sobriety challenge night here. Isn't this a little bit astonishing? I mean, he doesn't... Okay, he doesn't want to say it... Okay, let's understand. He doesn't want to say it in a mean way. He doesn't want to say...
If you've had one child, you're not married, and you're not married, you shouldn't have another one.
He doesn't want to say it in a mean way. He wants to say, if you've had one child and you're not married, you shouldn't have another one. Because that's what matters in America. It's how you say it, not what you say. Eugenics much, Rand? And then, because he is apparently a veritable font of wisdom, he and that thing on his head, speaking about high school students, Paul warned that
if you have children before you are married, the poverty rate is just astronomical. We need to be telling kids, don't have kids until you're married. It's your best chance to get in the middle class is not to have kids. There's all kinds of ways, and we can debate, but there are all kinds of ways to stop having kids.
I guess we're going
to
debate that after we get done debating whether or not government is stupid. Certainly any government run by Rand Paul would be stupid. I can think of several other better ways to get into the middle class than worrying about... I mean, yes, teen pregnancy is a problem. And it's a problem because... there's so little support out there for teen mothers. And God knows there's so little information out there to help teens from becoming teen mothers and teen daddies. We had 8 long, God-forsaken years of abstinence only. Just say no. Say no to the penis. And by the way, we need to be telling kids, don't have kids until you're married. Okay, we can do that. We can do that. Now, can we have another one of those famous debates, Rand, on who can get married? Huh? Can we? You think? Maybe? No. I wonder if he stole any of that language, plagiarized it. Don't know. Meanwhile, with
Rand saying what Rand did about how the other poll quote, I don't know how you do all that, because then it's tough to tell a woman with four kids that she's got a fifth kid, we're not going to give her any more money. But we have to figure out how to get that message through, because that is part of the answer. Right. There it is again. That old stalking horse, that old shibboleth of the right wing, that here in America, we pay the poors to have more poors babies. I had my latest baby. Where's my latest check? By the way, it is apparently an idea that's catching on. Think Progress noting that the idea of withholding benefits from women who have more than a certain number of children is actually current policy in 16 states. They cap assistance that a family can get if someone in the household is already receiving TANF money, temporary assistance for needy families. Apparently, it doesn't work. The Government Accountability Office says there's no determination as to whether it works. They do, however. You know how he wants people to go into the middle class? No, those policies in those 16 states do push people further into poverty. And, by the way, those 16 states that push people further into poverty? That's not exactly pushing people into poverty is not exactly pro-life, now, is it? No. And then, of course, there's Alabama, where having an environmental scientist who can come to West Virginia and say, you know, y'all are getting this whole disaster thing wrong, is balanced out by the ones who stay home. In this case, State Representative Becky Nordgren. She has introduced one of those conscience bills into the Alabama for consideration by the Alabama legislature. It's called the Health Care Rights of Conscience Act. And what it says is that any health care professional may refuse to participate in an abortion, a sterilization, human cloning, or embryonic stem cell research because, you know, those cloning labs are popping up right next to the payday loan joints all over Alabama. Not. But this is one of those cases of unintended consequences. The American Civil Liberties Union had a quick look at the bill. And they reached a pretty inescapable conclusion. You can read this over at ACLU.org. Alabama hospitals to pregnant women, sorry, honey, we won't help you here. The Alabama Senate is set to consider a cruel bill, HB 31, that would permit the hospital staff, including any doctor, nurse, counselor, or lab technician, really, the lab techs, they get that kind of detail, to refuse to participate in any phase of patient medical care related to ending a pregnancy, even if that is what a patient like a woman, that a woman needs to protect her own health and future fertility. Jenny Lee writes, yes, you heard that right. Under this law, if you or a loved one is pregnant and go to an emergency room in Alabama because of serious complications, every medical professional in that emergency room could refuse to help you if the care you needed to protect you from serious harm to your health required ending the pregnancy. By the way, it even provides immunity from suit if such conduct would otherwise rise to the level of medical malpractice. Has anybody told Rand Paul? I mean, maybe he'd like for the woman to go ahead and have the miscarriage, right? Now, granted, the right wing wants all these babies born, but sometimes, as we all know, it doesn't work out. Maybe, who knows, half the time, it doesn't work out. But, And I'm just asking from the standpoint of a guy who has been an expectant father a few times, and from the standpoint of an expectant father whose expectant wife had difficult pregnancies each and every time, preterm labor, that kind of stuff. This story really hit home for me because, as I think you all know, I, like most parents, love my children beyond reason, as Agnes loves our children beyond reason. And we made back when, well, we spent a lot of time trying to keep them from being born too early. I think we made something like 7 trips to the emergency room with one of our children. Eventually, in a desperate effort to make sure that she got here, Agnes had attached to her a pump that delivered intramuscular medication called Brethine to stop her from going into preterm labor. And when I read this story earlier, I just thought for a moment about how I would have responded had I taken my spouse to the emergency room in the midst of preterm labor. And some doc or nurse or lab tech or all of them had said, no, this might be a miscarriage, and our conscience prevents us from doing anything for her. Because she might, well, our conscience. Because, see, I can, hillbilly that I am, I can then see, or at least understand, some distraught, expectant father-to-be being unable, as a result of conscience, to resist the urge to go and get the ball bat out of the trunk and start laying about him with relish. Remember the relish? No, Lottie. In the Alabama law, the lab techs get to say that, too. Anybody. At least according to the ACLU, and I tend to trust them on stuff like this. So as if our healthcare system was not enough of a damn train wreck, as if it was not enough of a train wreck, the Alabama legislature is striving mightily to make it more of one. Hey, there's an idea. Stockton Larry in the chat room. See, Bob, right there is the reason you need to be able to take your gun to the emergency room. Wolverine. You know, they don't just hate this country esoterically or intellectually. I don't think you could say intellectually and Republican in the same sentence. It's personal to them. On the one hand, Rand Paul wants to decide who gets to breed and who does not. And if they have a little shotgun wedding before, that'd be better. And on the other hand, if your beloved spouse is beginning to hemorrhage, the Republicans in Alabama want to go ahead and let her bleed. Jesus. But that's not all. There's more. There's always more. There's always one more manhole opening to one more sewer below the last sewer that you thought had to be the lowest sewer the right wing could possibly exist in. And to get to that sewer, you gotta go to Utah. Where apparently the free market demands that deadbeat first graders pass on lunch. Really? Not a joke. Wish it was. And it's not theoretical either. It actually happened. It was lunchtime. Well, at least their lunches were made without methylchlorohexane methane. Take your victories where you can find them, Bob. Uinta Elementary School in Salt Lake City, where the child nutrition manager threw away the lunches of about 40 elementary school students this week because the kids' parents were behind on their lunch money payments. Stories in the Salt Lake Tribune. And apparently, this was a bit of a conundrum because the parents, the nutrition manager, and Well, she wanted to just not let the children have lunch until their moocher deadbeat parents ponied up. Unfortunately, they didn't have a list of the deadbeat first graders and second graders and third graders and fourth graders and fifth graders and sixth graders. I don't know. There was no list. And if you work in the lunchroom, the cafeteria of a school, what kind of inhuman monster would you be to go, nope, get out of the line. You don't get food today. I know people who have been school cooks. And they were dedicated and they were very loving in their approach to what they did. Oftentimes making do with much less than they actually needed. So here's the solution that the new child nutrition manager came up with. Anybody want to bet on how this person votes? They went ahead and served the lunches to all the children. And then the official went around child by child and took the food away from in front of them and threw it in the garbage. You know, I don't care where you're listening to this program from. I don't care if you are listening in Germany or Australia or Japan, in Canada, Mexico, in Kenya, Nigeria, Pakistan, India, Bangladesh. Russia, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, ain't got time to do the whole world. With the possible exception of North effing Korea, and I doubt even they do this, is there another country on the planet that goes and takes lunch away from a child sitting at the lunchroom table in school and throws it in the garbage? Oh, no, well, okay, there was some amelioration. They were told to get a piece of fruit and a carton of milk instead. Because the school system out there in Salt Lake City says that any child who cannot afford to pay for lunch is entitled to a piece of fruit and a carton of milk. Fifth grader Sophia said, so she took my lunch away and she said, go get a milk. And I said, what's going on? And she handed me an orange. She said, you don't have any money in your account, so you can't get lunch. God damn! We've turned into a nation of nurse ratchets. No fruit cup. Meanwhile, the Salt Lake City School District has issued apologies to the parents and the students, saying, we again apologize and commit to working with parents in rectifying this situation and to ensuring students are never treated in this manner again. Has the child nutrition manager been fired? Is there anybody within the sound of my voice who thinks that this person needs to be doing anything related to essential human needs ever again for the rest of his or her natural born days? Good God. This isn't just Utah. Oh, no, no, no. Remember when it happened in Texas? Because the kid was, a quarter short? Oh, yeah. I'm sure I'm making too big of a deal about it. I mean, it was an isolated incident in Utah, and, well, it's Utah, and... But wait, I mean, that's where the Osmonds come from. I mean, family values, feed the... Jesus! Did anybody ask Willard Romney? Note coming in from Jenny in Wisconsin. Jenny noting that you know that because of budget cuts, they farm out school lunch to private contractors. Capitalism at its finest. Well, there goes another little chunk of the commons. Of course we do. Of course we do. Should I go ahead and cue up Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA? No, let's don't say we didn't. And this is, you know, this isn't from The Onion. This isn't from The Daily Current. It's from the Salt Lake Tribune. And it won't be the only time we hear of a story like this. The Salt Lake City School District, I suspect, is probably more embarrassed that this got out than that it happened. One statistic indicates that only half of students in the United States who are eligible for free breakfasts actually get them. Well, see, there we go. Told you it wasn't an isolated incident. Fritz, via Twitter, at least three school districts I know of in Arkansas forbid kids from getting a full school lunch if accounts are not paid in full. Meanwhile, the wing nuts are worrying about the common core. Not so worried about common hunger. But, you know, that common core, they'll have them wearing little blue UN helmets next thing you know, and they'll be singing the anthem to Obama and, socialism. I do remember my childhood. And kids are kind of notorious for sometimes not being completely laser beam focused. Maybe this is what that's about. Maybe we're going to teach the little tykes to pay a little more attention, damn it. But I remember kids showing up without their lunch money. Alabama was a brutal place in that way. There was paperwork you could fill out, and there were kids who were on what was called free lunch. But if somebody didn't bring their lunch money, forgot it, perhaps? They fed them lunch, even in Alabamistan. They fed them lunch. They didn't serve them the lunch and then take the lunch out from in front of them and then throw it in the garbage and tell them to go get a milk and a banana. This is the future. Those little sparkles of decency that once could almost be taken for granted. You know, sometimes a teacher would reach into her purse and pull out the 50 cents or whatever it was for lunch, and it was a foregone conclusion that money would be there the next day. Or sometimes they just said, Well, you go ahead and eat, and we're going to send a note home so y'all remember to tomorrow. This from an Arkansas newspaper via Fritz. Hamburg School District students who have not paid their school lunch bills will have a 4-day grace period. Really, a grace period for an effing first grader. That's just beautiful, man. Hamburg School District students who have not paid their school lunch bills will have a 4-day grace period to make arrangements for payment, or they will be served cheese sandwiches again beginning Monday. The Hamburg School Board, in effect, held the existing policy in abeyance for the remainder of the week during the regular meeting on Monday night. According to the Ashley County Ledger, Lou Davis, the food services manager, said students owe approximately $12,000 in lunch charges. Most of the unpaid balance, $7,958, is from students at Noble All Britain Elementary. Charges at the high school are $1,274, with $1,178 at the middle school, $1,974 at Portland, and $120 at Wilmot Elementary. Anybody want to guess which one of those is the wealthiest school? But remember, the deficit, it's all about the deficit. I know that all the repiglicans like to think that Common Core or Agenda 21 or Benghazi or the IRS, that all of that's the true sign of the failure of this country. Newsflash. It's not. The sign of failure in this country lies in cutting food stamp benefits at the same time that we're increasing corporate welfare payouts in a farm bill. The true sign of an empire falling apart is a school district that's scared to death about deadbeat second graders instead of worrying whether or not the second graders are learning to read. And, what's more, not noting that there is a distinct correlation between not being able to eat and not being able to read. Oh, dear. Jenny in Wisconsin. My daughter just told me that if you didn't have money, all you would get was a cheese sandwich. Meanwhile, Marty noting, shouldn't that be parents of students owing rather than students owing? I'm betting the elementary school students don't have jobs yet. But remember, Newt Gingrich wants them to all be school janitors. And then if they'll just wait to have children until they're married, they'll automatically be given a certificate suitable for framing and a secret decoder ring for entree into the middle class, according to Rand Paul and that thing on his head. The thorns on this Thorn in the Side Thursday are beginning to feel decidedly like darts. So we'll take a break. You're listening to Conversation Radio, listener-supported Conversation Radio. And Sal has, as Sal is want to do, and we are ever so grateful for it, jumped in this evening to stand with our anonymous contributor to help match the $100 challenge the anonymous contributor put forward. Thank you very much. Anybody else that wants to join them,
is more than welcome. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, or if you prefer to do it by traditional mail methods, the mailing address is also at the website under the tab Contribute. Just shoot me an email and say, hey, count me in along in with the challenge, and we're right there. Break time. I really think it's kind of necessary at this point. We've got a long-distance dedication going out to Representative... where'd her name go? We'll have it in a sec here. Let's just put it out to the long-distance dedication going out to the Alabama legislature. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Man got his woman to take his seat. He got the power, she got the need. She spends her life through pleasing up her man. Feeds him dinner, anything she can. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Man makes your hair gray. He's your life's mistake. All you're really looking for's an even break. He lies right at you. You know you hate this game. Slaps you once in a while and you live in love and pain. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women leave. Only women leave. Only women bleed. Black eyes all of the time. Don't spend a dime. Clean up this grime and
Thursday, January 30, 2014.
Natural gas, if extracted safely, it's the bridge fuel.
Obama's State of the Union goes big for fracking.
We can't extract it safely.
But green groups say it's a bridge to nowhere.
We don't want to be accused of crying wolf.
Extreme weather paralyzes Atlanta. Plus, the NSA spied on UN climate talks.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The all-of-the-above energy strategy I announced a few years ago is working.
The all-of-the-above energy strategy? Where have I heard that before? Where have I heard that before?
We have to have all of the above.
Ah, thank you, President McCain. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it was the big State of the Union address this week. President Obama was very proud of his all-of-the-above energy strategy for nukes, for oil, for coal, for natural gas fracking, and, of course, renewables, the same strategy that John McCain and Sarah Palin were very eager to move forward back in 2008.
Yes, yes, they were, and President Obama has embraced that. But at least he was unequivocal on the necessity to act on climate change in his State of the Union.
The debate is settled. Climate change is a fact. And when our children's children look us in the eye and ask if we did all we could to leave them a safer, more stable world with new sources of energy, I want us to be able to say, yes, we did.
And indeed, the president has been able to accomplish much without Congress using executive authority, like first-ever emissions standards for power plants. But big environmental groups criticized his focus on natural gas.
Today, America is closer to energy independence than we have been in decades. One of the reasons why is natural gas. If extracted safely, it's the bridge fuel that can power our economy with less of the carbon pollution that causes climate change.
If extracted safely, that's a pretty big if, Mr. President.
Natural gas does have about half the emissions of coal, but in an interview with Brad on his Pacifica radio broadcast, Joe Rome, founder of Climate Progress and former Clinton administration Energy Department official, explains why natural gas is not a long-term solution.
Based on the science and the actual observations is that we can't extract it safely. And if you leak very much natural gas, then you kind of squander the benefit of switching from coal power to natural gas power. And the latest research calls into question whether it's any better.
Meanwhile, big business is pouring millions into a new lobbying effort to fight the Obama administration's new emission standards for coal-fired power plants, and they want to continue polluting for free. They've launched a new coalition with a lovely name, the Partnership for a Better Energy Future.
That is lovely.
Yes, so remember, when you hear about the Partnership for a Better Energy Future, they're actually the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, the American Farm Bureau, and 70 other industry organizations that are joining forces to fight action on climate change.
To continue extracting dirty fossil fuels like oil and coal and natural gas.
Yep.
That's the energy future.
Meanwhile, snowpocalypse in Atlanta.
Also, if I don't get home to my parents, I'm like, I'm going to freak out.
A rare and deadly snowstorm literally paralyzed the city of Atlanta this week, trapping folks across the southeast in their cars, stores, and schools for days. Georgia Governor Nathan Deal defended the choices of officials prior to the storm.
We don't want to be accused of crying wolf, because if we'd been wrong, y'all would have all been in here saying, well, you know how many millions of dollars you cost the economy of the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia by shutting down businesses all over this city and this state?
Never mind keeping people safe. Never mind the fact that people were stuck in their cars overnight, that children were sleeping at schools overnight. The fact is, they were given a warning about this snowstorm. The science told them there was going to be this snowstorm. Here's Al Roker on NBC explaining what happened.
Winter weather advisory upgraded to warning. A full 8 hours before the snow started, there was plenty of time to make those adjustments for any kind of snow removal.
But remember, they didn't want to cry wolf and
cost the economy of the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia by shutting down businesses all over this city and this state.
Meanwhile, anger in the international diplomatic community. Kate Shepard at the Huffington Post revealed on Thursday that the NSA spied on negotiators at the big UN climate summit in Copenhagen.
Well, of course they did. There could be terrorists there, right?
No, not so much. That was back in 2009. It was exposed in new documents from NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden.
Well, if it wasn't terrorism they were concerned about at the climate summit, why were they spying on the negotiators?
That's an excellent question.
I'm starting to think this whole NSA thing isn't really all about terrorism after all.
Hmm.
For much more on that and all of the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download us via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. You can find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. Stop on by bradblog.com and help us celebrate our 10th anniversary, one decade of raking the muck. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. I always feel like
well, there's a blast from your past. Kind of irresistible. Who was that? Michael Jackson, more or less, did that track. But well, anyway. Thanks going out to, as we enter this third hour of tonight's Thorn in the Side Thursday, thanks going out to Peter, who has joined in with Sal to help out with our anonymous contributor to meet that $100 challenge. Thank you very, very much. That puts us only $75 away from meeting the challenge. And also, since I started out the program with a couple of happy birthday wishes, let me also throw out a happy anniversary wish. It turns out that Damon and Libby are celebrating their anniversary, and many happy returns to them both. I always love little notes like this because it just... It sort of warms up the process because right now, you know, I mean, realistically, it's me and a microphone, and I have to hear from you guys in order to sort of surround myself with some reality. So I hope you both have a magnificent, magnificent anniversary. And you know what? Don't be shy. Call in sometime. I know you've listened. And I know you know that we have yet to... Now, I've screwed up with the buttons once in a while. That's on me. And occasionally the cell phone battery will go bad or something, or go dead or something. But no. Nobody's ever fainted or had to haul out the smelling salts. No. Dial in sometime. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary, Damon and Libby. And many, many happy returns. Rockwell. Okay, thank you, Marty. Thank you. Email coming in from Diane in Kansas Stan. Subject line, no lunch for you. I'm sick to the depths of my being about the attack on the weak and vulnerable that many feel free to enact boldly in this society. It is as if the right wing has unleashed a monster. I don't think it's as if. I think they have, Diane. And that monster feels no compunction about practicing cruelty openly. My mother once owned 3 proprietary Montessori schools in Kansas City. She would have never denied a child food while others ate. And she is a Republican. But as you have said, that party has been hijacked by the worst among us. Even so, I live in the very heart of the Midwest, and I know many people here who claim to be conservative but would never deny a child food. There seems to be some great disconnect between the myth of Ayn Rand and those who ape it and the natural impulses of many people who actually live constructively and caringly in a community of others. I'm stuck in cognitive distortion almost every day. And I understand that. I mean, that's kind of... That's kind of the world around here. Now, granted, I briefly saw an episode of Appalachian Outlaws about the hard scrabble life of ginseng hunting. And, well, there went another stick of furniture. But people the world over, especially, you know, especially people who, no, there's no especially to it. People will reach out and help one another, but the problem is that when you get them in a group and you say things to them like, well, we don't need any school lunch programs because the deficit, if they're in a group, they will behave with a mob mentality.
And among other things, they've got thought leaders like the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, who will suggest that children, and he did this, you can look it up, need to learn how to dumpster dive. See, I think this is where it boils down. The right wing decries collectivism the way you and I understand it. Because the way we understand collectivism is that we all work together for the common good. The right wing understands collectivism as the method or by which they all band together to insulate themselves from any sort of responsibility and work to, yeah, that's the phrase, Diane, to ape Ayn Rand. Because if there's a whole bunch of people standing around you going, yeah, hell yeah, welfare sucks. Well, then you can go, welfare sucks. And everybody, yeah, that's right, pat them on the back. As long as you're not having to look the children in the eye. And the same thing applies to Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Would he really look at a mother-to-be who was unwed? And is it just me, or is that phrase so 19th century? Or maybe 15th century? Or maybe 11th century BCE? Would Rand Paul really look at a mother-to-be whose fetus he professes to cherish and tell her she really ought not be having that baby? Here, honey, come with me. I'm going to take you right down the street to the abortion clinic. Really? Evil, 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 evil. So thank you, Diane. Thank you for your note. It is. It's very real. This disconnect. I mean, even the guys who were telling me global warming is a hoax now, because I was simply trying to buy a heater. Even though, I mean, they weren't saying it confrontationally. They were saying it neighbor to neighbor. Well, I guess we know, don't we, huh? Because they made certain, and I think Dr. John pointed this out, they made certain privileged assumptions based upon what they perceived to be my status. Because I wasn't wearing a Kiss Me, I'm a Liberal t-shirt or something. That would have prevented them from saying anything about global warming. I was the one who violated the status quo by saying, well, actually, it's real. Oh, thanks. Many thanks. Yes, indeed. Thanks to Jay, who has now taken us up to being only $25 away from meeting our kind anonymous challenge for this evening. Thank you very kindly. If we can meet that challenge, that'll mean we've only got to do $255 tomorrow to finish January in the good. I want to take a minute before we go back into the screaming fits. And the lines are open, if you want to participate. 304-658-3333. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Maybe we'll have to add Google Hangout to this too, so you can reach in by, so you can reach the program by Google. But anyway, I want to take a minute away from the screaming just to point out a good thing, something praiseworthy, something damned well worthy of note. And that's this. Rush Holt is a damned fine member of Congress. He's a Democrat from New Jersey. He is a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding scientist. He also has hillbilly roots. Yeah. His daddy, I believe, was a senator from the state of West Virginia. And at some point in time, well, he became a New Jerseyanite. Not sure. But because he is committed to living in reality world, Rush Holt has done the unthinkable. And I mention this story because sometimes when we deal with all the thorns in our side, and this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, you know, when we deal with all the thorns in our sides, we come to the realization that sometimes it is more than appropriate and perhaps the only rational response to poke back. And that Rush Holt has done. Brilliantly and factually. HRES 41, expressing support for designation of February 12th, 2014, as Darwin Day. Well, this is the one from 2013. I'm sorry. Well, the point is, he's done it again. Rush Holt has once again reintroduced his resolution to celebrate the anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin for purposes of noting the importance of science in our world. So that henceforth and forevermore, February 12th would be Darwin Day. The resolution reintroduced reads as follows. Expressing support for designation of February 12, 2013 as Darwin Day and recognizing the importance of science in the betterment of humanity. Whereas Charles Darwin's theory of evolution by the mechanism of natural selection, together with the monumental amount of scientific evidence he compiled to support it, provides humanity with a logical and intellectually compelling explanation for the diversity of life on Earth, whereas the validity of Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection is further strongly supported by the modern understanding of the science of genetics, whereas it has been the human curiosity and ingenuity exemplified by Darwin that has promoted new scientific discoveries that have helped humanity solve many problems and improve living conditions, whereas the advancement of science must be protected from those unconcerned with the adverse impacts of global warming and climate change, whereas the teaching of creationism in some public schools compromises the scientific and academic integrity of the United States education systems, whereas Charles Darwin is a worthy symbol of scientific advancement on which to focus and around which to build a global celebration of science and humanity intended to promote a common bond among all of Earth's peoples, and whereas February 12, 2013, now 2014, is the anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin in 1809 and would be an appropriate date to designate as Darwin Day, now therefore be it resolved that the House of Representatives, 1, supports the designation of Darwin Day, and 2, recognizes Charles Darwin as a worthy symbol on which to celebrate the achievements of reason, science, and the advancement of human knowledge. Time out. Seriously. Not even little golf clap. That's... No. Big one. Big clap. Big applause for Representative Rush Holt of New Jersey, who has stepped forward to offer that resolution. And I am sure, seeing as how it was referred to the Committee on Science and Technology, this ought to be fun. House Science and Technology Committee. Let's see who's on it. Welcome to the Committee on Science, U.S. House of Representatives. Members, okay. Oh, my gracious. You want to hear the majority members that this got referred to? Lamar Smith, Texas. Dana Rohrabacher, California. Ralph M. Hall, Texas. F. James Sensenbrenner. Frank D. Lucas. Randy Neugebauer. Michael T. McCall. Oklahoma, Texas, Texas, respectively. Paul Brown, Lies from the Pits of Hell, Paul Brown. Mo Brooks, Alabama. I prefer Les Brooks. Randy Hutgren, Illinois. Larry Buckshawn, Indiana. Steve Stockman of Texas. Bill Posey, Cynthia Loomis. Dave Schweikert, Arizona. Thomas Massey of Kentucky. Kevin Kramer of North Dakota. Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma. Ooh, he's an up-and-coming genius. Randy Weber of Texas and Chris Collins of New York. Yeah, that's the sound of their little heads popping inside their little Martian glass globe helmets. Introduce another one, Rush. We want to see him. We want to see him scream some more. Oh, my heavenly days. I wonder how long it'll take before I get the obligatory note from the American Family Association about that godless communist evolutionist. Oh. It's a beautiful thing, though. Thank you. Thank you, Rush Holt, for reminding us that not everybody needs to be thrown out of Congress, that some people need to be emulated, and that we need to find more people like them to, Thank you. Thank you, Rush Holt. Darwin Day. Mark that on your calendar. Even though Lamar Smith and Paul Lies from the Pits of Hell Brown won't let it be celebrated and it'll never make it out of committee, even so, you can celebrate Darwin Day all by yourself. Let me look at the calendar real quick. Will somebody please make a note? Yeah, February the 12th, 2014 falls on it's a foregone conclusion now. February the 12th, 2014, falleth upon a Wednesday, a prayer meeting Wednesday. So would somebody please not let me forget that we must have our prayer meeting Wednesday, Darwin Day celebration on February the 12th? Please? We need to do that. So thank you. Thank you, Rush Holt. Darwin Day. And I know I like the little shot across the bow, too. About public schools teaching creationism, because they really are, and it really needs to be stopped quick. I mean, sure, teach it in philosophy class, religion class, social studies class. Teach it alongside, elephant standing on a turtle, standing on a turtle, standing on a turtle, turtles all the way down. Teach that. That's fine. Don't teach it in biology class. Don't teach it in physics. Don't teach it in introductory science. Don't. Yes, I know February 12th. Thanks, Randy. I do know February 12th is also Lincoln's birthday. But federally, that's now just celebrated as President's Day, which that one in our White House is now ruined by being a president. By the way, for anybody keeping track, the bill has been introduced in Congress since 2011. The first person to introduce the Darwin Day resolution was former Representative Pete Stark, the first and only open atheist to serve in Congress. Hooray. So, coffee breaks over. Back on your heads. Oh, wait, quick email coming in. Kate, writing from out Montana way. I have often noticed that adults are often shocked when observing behavior of kids. They often wonder, whatever happened to that kid? The parents were such nice folks. When I see youngsters acting out tantrums, bullying, violent crime, I ask myself, where did they learn that? Kids are seldom born that way. It may start in the lunchroom, way back then. While you were reporting that story, I felt pangs of anger, shame, and some tears, recalling my childhood. I would be interested in knowing if there are bully-free zone signs around the school. Those memories make me want to rip into the people who abuse children. Imagine what kind of shame those unfed kids have felt the rest of the day after lunch of an orange and milk. I need to cut this short, says Kate, before I say something that is so not me until I refeel kid shame. Yeah, because, see, the child nutrition manager who was picking the trays up off the table is pretty much a bully in her own right. And while we tend to be forgiving of children, or we think that there's enough hope for them that we will try to correct the error of their ways and help them not be bullies anymore, what do you do with an adult who bullies a fifth grader or a second grader? What do you do? What do you do? Marty, I tend to concur. Marty says, my favorite Brooks is Mel Brooks. Oh, by the way, Kate notes that bullies are seldom born that way. Oh, you might recall that at one point in time, Lady Gaga had a hit with a song called Born This Way. Right-wingers said, well, that's going to lead children to think that it's okay to be a homosexual. Right? Well, now apparently Lady Gaga has become a talking point for the right wing, and not just any right-winger. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, not just any right-winger, but Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood of Alabamistan. Not kidding.
Different family.
After the commercial. Wait till you hear this.
I invested a tremendous amount of my time. Citizens all over America invested huge amounts of their time, volunteer efforts, financial contributions to break the cycle of drug use among young people that were threatening the very viability of our education system and the future of so many. It was just a very serious thing. So I have to tell you, I'm heartbroken to see what the president said just a few days ago. It's just stunning to me. I find it beyond comprehension. This is the Atlantic article surveying what the New Yorker, the president's interview with the...
Yeah, surveying what the president done said in that one in the White House.
Do I have to tell you that this is about pot, cannabis, weed, ganja? Yeah, this is... And
Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood is afraid for what the marijuana will do to America's children.
The stupid goes on for a while, but it'll be worth it.
New Yorker said, the headline is, Obama on pot legalization. It's important for it to go forward. That's the president's quote. It goes on to quote from that interview.
Actually, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood, that is not a quote from the president. That is a headline in the Atlantic. And this is probably the first time you've ever seen it, because that's a liberal publication, right? Lord God, can you... But, well, it's a quote to him.
He said the following things about smoking marijuana. Quote, I view it as a bad habit and vice, not very different from the cigarettes I smoked as a young person. I don't think it's more dangerous than alcohol, he said. In fact, it's less dangerous than alcohol, quote, in terms of its impact on the individual consumer. And then he goes on to say, well, those who argue for legalizing marijuana as a panacea and
Quick, quick, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. What does panacea mean? Never mind. Something Kenyon?
And it solves all these social problems, I think, are probably overstating the case. This is it's just difficult to me to conceive how the President of the United States could make...
United States? Oh, Jefferson.
Such a statement as that. Here is...
Wait. How he could make a statement that everybody's saying that cannabis is a panacea for everything are probably overstating the case? I would think that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III would probably agree with something like that. I mean, granted, I probably would have been shocked had President Not Sure said, you know, dude, everybody blaze up. But he... why do we bother?
That make... conduct any medical or scientific survey before he waltzed into the New Yorker?
Waltzed into the New Yorker? Waltzing, don't you understand? Waltzing. You know, probably with his pants on halfway down around his knees. You know how they are.
And opined contrary to the position of attorney generals and presidents universally prior to that?
By the way, he's speechifying at Eric Holder, in case you're wondering.
Marijuana is not, as I've quoted him. Did he study any of this data before he made that statement?
I don't know, but I think, as I
did
said...
Did he consult...
Note from Jeremy. Bob, this is one of them duct tape and tennis ball speeches. The stupid hurts my foot as I kick away at harmless chairs around me. We're hell on the furniture. We really are. At least it's not below zero, at least here, if I have to go screaming into the night. Yeah, there probably should have been a duct tape and tennis ball warning on this, Jeremy. I hope you had time to go out and get new, because I know you were out last night. So, oh, Alabama, 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 doesn't he make you proud?
What with you before he made that statement?
No, we didn't talk about that.
Well, what about this study?
Does the Attorney General get to finish his statement, or you're just going to bulldoze right on by? Did he talk with you before he made this statement? No. Well, what about this? This is big, shining cross-examination moment.
From the American Medical Association, October of 2013. Heavy cannabis use in adolescence causes persistent impairments in neurocognitive performance and IQ, and use is associated with increased rates of anxiety, mood, and psychotic thought disorders, close quote. Or this report from Northwestern University in last December. The study found that marijuana users have abnormal brain structure and poor memory, and that chronic marijuana use...
What were we talking about?
...use may lead to brain changes resembling schizophrenia. The study also reported that the younger the person starts using marijuana, the worse the effects become.
I can only assume then that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III was sucking THC out of his mama's nipple the minute he was born. But that's me, and I'm mean.
Would you dispute those reports?
I've not read the reports, but I don't. If they are in fact from the AMA, I'm sure they are good reports. But that is exactly why one of our eight enforcement priorities is the prevention of marijuana to minors.
Well,
because that does kind of make sense, and if you regulate it and you tax it, well, that means a good bit of the black market goes away now, doesn't it? Because prohibition works so well. I do kind of wish Eric would have mentioned that to him. Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, son, are you suggesting that the prohibition we have now is working about as well as prohibition did with alcohol? Is that what you're suggesting, Senator?
The Gaga said she's a...
To who? We're going to back up.
I've not read the reports, but I don't. If they are in fact from the AMA, I'm sure they are good reports. But that is exactly why one of our eight enforcement priorities is the prevention of marijuana to minors.
Well, Lady Gaga said she's addicted to it and is not harmless.
Well, okay. Never mind the AMA or the British Medical Journal Lancet. Who knew Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III was a fan? Lady Gaga says she is addicted to it. Yes, addicted, I swear.
She's been addicted to it. Patrick Kennedy, former Congressman Kennedy, said the president is wrong on this subject. So,
what is he wrong about? Are they saying that, because to be wrong on what the president said, i.e. that it is not, that cannabis is not as bad as alcohol, is not a wrong statement. But see, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III is a great big stinking hypocrite. Because at the end of the day, he's going to go back and have him a slug of old panther piss or whatever it is his poison of choice is, and sit there and talk about how the young people that are smoking on the marijuana is going to be the fall of America. Senator, did they get to eat lunch? Well, that ain't what I'm talking about. See, they're smoking on the marijuana, and it gives them the munchies, and then they want to eat more school lunches and the deficit, my Jesus.
I just think it's a huge issue. I hope that you will talk with the president, you're close to him, and begin to push back or pull back from this position.
Push, pull, whatever. You know, the fact of the matter is, what I want to see next is Lady Gaga kissing him right square on the mouth eater. That's what I want to see. You can't make this stuff up. You couldn't get away. You could not get away with publishing this as fiction. It would not work. And so it goes. Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is deeply worried about the weed. Oh, by the way, just a little Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III story, if I may. Back when the Senate of the United States was rejecting him for a position on the federal bench, because Ronnie Reagan did actually nominate him for a judgeship there in Alabama stand, and they ran a little investigation on him, and it turned out that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III turned out that, well, he had this little history he did, and you could probably expect it. Let's see, so what is he, 60, 65, 70? So that would put him getting all borned up in somewhere between math. Oh, damn the math. Let's just round it down to 10. And so he'd be getting all borned up somewhere around 1950, 1940, perhaps. And so that would make Jefferson Beauregard Sessions Jr. Maybe borned all about somewhere around about maybe 1910. Which would probably make Jefferson Beauregard Sessions I probably born up about 1880, long about when the Lost Cause was a-getting its legs on. Because, see, the first Jefferson Beauregard Sessions was named after Jefferson Davis and Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard. This man, pontificating against the evils of the marijuana, is actually a relic of the Civil War, or as I'm sure he refers to it, the War of Northern Aggression. Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard was, after all, the man who hollered, "Fire!" out there with them keydets taking pot shots at Fort Sumter when they decided to commit treason against their own country. This man has treason in the first two names of his whole name. I think if I was a real, live, honest, upstanding American, I'd say you all can just call me J.B. Sessions, or maybe I'd even change my name to get all the treason out of it, because it's all treasoned up. But anyway, when the fellow with the treason name was getting considered for a federal judgeship, it turned out that he had been working in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Alabama, Stan, and they had a new lawyer on staff. I believe it was reported, and the new lawyer was a little darker of skin pigment, and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood was at great pains to explain to the new lawyer with the high melanin content to make real careful sure about how it was he went referring to the ladies in the office, to the extent that I do believe he referred to him as boy. As in, boy, you want to be careful what you say around the women folks here. And then it turned out that, I don't know, maybe three or four shots into that bottle of old panther piss, which is obviously much more benign than any of the marijuana, it turned out that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Hood turned out that, well, goodness me, mercy sakes alive, he once told someone, you know, I used to think the Klan was an okay organization until I found it out that they smoked the marijuana. So at least he's consistent like he is. But I mean, Lady Gaga says she's addicted to it. Just like them opium dens. Mm-hmm. Good God. Goodbye. No, to Jefferson, that is. But, you know, whether it's Rand Paul and that thing on his head, all worried about women's having too many babies, or just how addicting the marijuana is. They got lots of things they need to be worrying about besides stuff that actually matters. Danny with... Please, put the accent away, Bob. Danny with an email. Oh, Bob. Change his name to get all of the treason out of it. LOL. Ha. I just peed my pants. Too damn funny. At least that stupid son of a bitch can provide us some humor via you. If only Danny, he understood how damn funny he is. Humor. It's a joke. It's a joke, son. A joke. Just once in the Senate, I'd like to hear. The chair recognizes Senator Leghorn from Alabama. Sessions. Devin with a note. The war of Northern Hashishishin. I can't resist. I just cannot resist. I'm sorry. I can't. I want to hear the real thing, not the pale imitation, and I do mean pale, by Senator Sessions.
What a day for tramping through the woods.
I'm a
chicken. Rooster, that is.
Don't give me that. You're not a chicken.
What am I, then, boy?
You're a loudmouth snook.
Look at here, son. I'm no loudmouth snook. This is a dog, not a chicken. Chickens don't look like dogs. Who told you this was a chicken, son? Nice boy, but doesn't listen to a word you say. Now, what's that? I say, now, what's that boy up to? Better check on it, yeah. Hey, boy, what's going on here? What you trying to do? Oh, no, back off there, son. You'll never do it. You're not strong enough. Job like this, you gotta have a know-how. There you are, boy. Your punkin is tied down pretty.
Got a match, mister?
Match? Match? Yeah, here you are, boy. Don't set the world on fire. These kids coming up nowadays don't even know how to tie down their pumpkins. Why, when I was a boy, I never tied down no pumpkins. Hey, son, what you tying down a pumpkin for? What's the...
Ask a silly question, get a silly answer.
Back in the day, kids don't even know how to tie that because they're smoking the marijuana.
Oh, mercy. But let's finish the evening, if we may, with another hiding of the right wing. We began the hour by celebrating Rush Holt. Let's finish out the program with this. Okay, the story about the children getting their lunch taken away from them in Utah is very real, to the point that the Salt Lake School District apologized for it. On the other hand, if the right wing gins one up, you can just about guarantee that it's fake. In this particular case, it's the story, it's a war on Christmas story, which we mercifully don't have to worry about for another 10.5 months or so. The right wing just took this over at that cesspool called Town Hall and ran with it like greased lightning. Bryn Williams decided to bring the Star of Bethlehem that adorned the top of her family's Christmas tree. This was for show and tell at school, but in advance. She also worked on a one-minute presentation to explain that her family's tradition is to remember the birth of Jesus at Christmas time. Our Christmas tradition is to put a star on top of the tree, the little girl said. The star is named the Star of Bethlehem. The three kings followed the star to find baby Jesus, the Savior of the world. Who apparently enjoys a good puzzle. Instead of just, you know, sending an angel down to the three kings saying, hey, just kid, stable, Bethlehem, go. Nope, had to follow a star. Anyway. In the BS'd up account offered by the right wing, before the child could utter another word, the teacher intervened. According to Robert Tyler, the general counsel for Advocates for Faith and Freedom, the law firm representing the Williams family, Bryn's teacher said, "Stop right there! Go take your seat." Bryn was not allowed to finish her presentation by reciting the Bible verse, John 3:16. Tyler said the little girl was the only student in the class not allowed to finish her presentation. After Bryn took her seat, the teacher explained to Bryn in front of all the other students that she was not allowed to talk about the Bible or share its verses, Tyler said. Except for one thing. Being as how this is a story being promoted by Christians, it's full of lies. They can't help themselves. You know, because they're forgiven instantaneously. Forgive me, Jesus, I lied on a teacher. Okay. Well, there's been a complete investigation costing God knows how much money to find out if little Bryn got her religious rights trampled upon, as alleged by the liars at the, Advocates for Faith and Freedom. It is almost entirely a fabrication of the Advocates for Faith and Freedom and the thin gray settlings that pass for Bryn's parents' brains. They gave the child a pre-written script that she was supposed to read to the class, you know, to proselytize. The poor child couldn't even read all the words that Mommy and Daddy had written for her to, yeah. So the teacher got trashed by the religious right. But after the investigation, it turns out these Christians are just lying. On Thursday, the teacher, Tammy Williams, responded. On Thursday, December 19th, my class was getting our classroom ready for our holiday party that was to occur the next morning. We took longer than normal putting things away to ensure that the desks were clean and book boxes were put away so that tables could be used for our centers. This was normally something we did on Fridays, but because of this, we were running behind, and I still had six students who needed to do their sharing, because they have sharing. Children are allowed. And she says, I had a very limited amount of time and needed to make sure all students had time to share. Now, remember, this is sharing. There were not oral reports. Students were asked to share a family tradition. It could be anything, not just a Christmas tradition. During sharing, I work with students on looking at the audience and using clear voices. We also work on listening skills and asking questions. The student was not the last to present, as had been reported. I still had a couple of students after her, which was the student of the day and the student of the week. When she started her share, she pulled out her golden star that I held for her as she pulled out her prepared speech written by one of her parents. This was unusual because rarely does a student have a prepared statement to read. As I held the star, but remember, these are persecuted Christians. As I held the star, the student began to read her statement. I helped her with a few words that she was having trouble with. I decided I would have the student stop after sharing about Mary and Joseph. I felt that it would take too long, and I still needed her to take her question, and I had a few clarifying questions for her as well. At this point, I simply said the following. Okay, stop here and you get one question. She simply put her paper down, picked a student who asked her a question. I also asked her, who puts the star on the tree? Do you take turns? I even suggested her dad could lift her up to help her put the star on the tree. After that, well, I'm sure that ain't going to happen. After that, she put her star away and sat with the class while we finished with the other students. I monitor all students this way. She at no time complained or acted sad. She was as happy as always. I want to be clear about the following. At no time did I ever tell the student that she could not read the bottom section because it was a Bible verse, nor did she ask if she could finish. I never told her to stop right there or go take your seat or reprimand her in front of the class for sharing from the Bible. It just did not happen. You know, it's funny. These Christians want to post the Ten Commandments all over the place. Maybe it's not for us. Maybe it's for them because they can't remember them. They can't remember, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor or thy first grader's teacher. I decided to stop her at that point so the other students would get their share in before the bell rang. My students have always been free to share their ideas. What saddens me is that this story was twisted into lies and brought to the media. I've never sat down and discussed this directly with the family or the student. I'm instead being used to push an agenda for the advocates for faith and freedom, I have no doubt, fundraising their phony little lying Christian asses off over this. Then came the statement from the principal. Over the past week, I have received countless... Because this is how right-wing Christians behave. Over the past week, I have received countless phone calls and 126 mean-spirited emails, you know, from the follower of the Prince of Peace and the God who loves all of his creation, from across the country as a result of the claims that the advocates of faith and freedom have made against one of my teachers, the school district, and myself. These claims are simply not true. You know, Principal Amy Paradise, kudos to you for not just calling them the liars that they are. Liars for Jesus, forgiven. When I met with the parent on December 20th, 2013, she shared that she and her husband were upset that their child was unable to finish her presentation, and they thought it was because it contained a Bible verse. No, they believed it. They didn't think it, ma'am. There were absolutely no claims of humiliation or bullying by the classroom teacher, no claims that their child was told to take her seat or that she could not talk about the Bible. These claims have been made in the midst of a media spotlight in order to sensationalize a story. The truth is, there were other students left to present before the end of the day, and there was just not enough time. Furthermore, when I met with this parent, I never told her that her child may not share her beliefs aloud to other students, nor did I try to stifle her freedom of speech in any way. I told the parent that I would follow up with the classroom teacher and I sent her the results of my findings along with the copy of the board policy regarding religion on December 24, 2013. I have not heard from her since, not once to tell me that she did not agree with my findings, not once to ask for a classroom change for her child. In fact, with the exception of today, this student has attended school every day since this incident in the same exact classroom where this alleged incident occurred. And then we find out that Principal Amy Paradise is pissed. Lastly, I would be remiss if I did not address the classroom teacher in the center of this controversy, Mrs. Tammy Williams. Mrs. Tammy Williams is one of the finest educators I have ever worked with. She is an amazing first grade teacher, taught my own son last year, and I would not hesitate to put my younger son in her class. She does not deserve the harassment or bullying, remember, done by Christians. They've been doing it for 2,000 years. Why are we surprised? That she has received the questioning of her professional skills or judgment, or the claims that she harmed this child in any way. I stand behind Mrs. Tammy Williams 110% and find it extremely unfortunate that the advocates for faith and freedom have irrevocably caused damage to her good name. The days will pass and this story will not be at the top of the news for long, but the damage that it has done to the good names of Helen Hunt Jackson Elementary School, Mrs. Tammy Williams, and myself will be difficult to repair. There you have it. They just make shit up because they are so obsessed with forcing everybody else to believe the weird shit that they do. Well, you know, Mrs. Tammy Williams, I know you're not listening, but I hope you sue the living bejesus out of the family and out of the advocates for faith and freedom. You can, yeah, maybe you'll drop the family later. Get the judgment first, and then use the joint and several liability to go out and just break, bankrupt the advocates for faith and freedom. Because for those who believe in that whole cosmology, Christian cosmology, they're agents of Satan. Plain and simple. So we close out with a win for our side, a win for normalcy, a win for decency, a win for not lying about people, and a victory over right-wing fundamentalist Christianity. And we win with, we close with thanks, thanks to everybody, thanks to Sal and to Peter and to Jay who joined in with our anonymous contributor. We finished up only $25 short of our anonymous contributor's $100 challenge, so thank you very, very much. And that leaves us within striking distance of finishing January okay tomorrow evening. Thank you very much. Thanks to all of our volunteer staff. Thanks to you who spend your precious finite time listening and sharing on this program. Again, happy anniversary, Damon, out in Washington. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AcheAct.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.